NBC News presents The Arrest of Patty Hearst. Here is NBC News correspondent, Tom Snyder.
Good evening. Patty Hearst, the kidnapped daughter of a wealthy publisher 19 months ago. Later, the dedicated revolutionary Tanya is in the hands of federal authorities tonight in San Francisco, California. Held in $500,000 bail, accused of bank robbery, unlawful possession of weapons, and those are only federal charges, the state of California intends to deal with her too in the future. Patty Hearst is 21 years old. Less than an hour before Patty was seized in a house in the Mission District of San Francisco, two of her revolutionist friends, William and Emily Harris, were taken by the FBI on another street in the Mission District, both of them dressed in jogging suits. They had actually been out running this afternoon. Each of the Harrises was held in $500,000 bail as well. And finally, arrested with Patty in a house on Moore Street, Wendy Yoshimura, friend of the others, artist, and a close sympathizer of the revolutionaries who call themselves the SLA, the Symbionese Liberation Army. Now, says the FBI, with the arrest of these four, there is no more SLA. And here is more on the case of Patty Hearst from Rick Davis in California.
Late this afternoon, Patricia Hearst was arraigned at the federal courthouse in San Francisco. The charge, the SLA armed robbery of the Hibernia Bank in San Francisco. But there were 18 other charges, federal and state, against her. She seemed small and frail in court, gave one raised fist salute, spoke twice. Question, are you Patricia Hearst? Answer, yes. How old are you? 21. In contrast, Bill Harris entered with both fists raised high. He was forced to sit by federal marshals. As he left court, Harris shouted, "This ain't no big deal, comrades. Long live the guerrillas." But there was no defiance when Emily and Bill Harris were arrested today.
There was no resistance when the Harrises were arrested on the street. Emily Harris attempted to run, but didn't run very far.
How did you find out they were in town? How were they dressed? What did they look?
They were in jogging clothes.
All of them?
Bill and Emily Harris.
What about Patty Hearst? Right. What was her condition and her appearance?
I saw her just briefly. She looks okay.
What proved to be the big break in this case?
Well, I think it was just a lot of hard work and effort, and when we were in that area, which we had reason to believe, and we've been in a lot of areas in the last year and a half, we observed these two people, and as we always do, we check them out. As you all know, that we've checked out thousands of people in this case, and this is the one we checked out, and it was the Harris.
U.S. Attorney James Browning commented on announced intentions to seek reduced bail for Patricia Hearst and the Harrises. Bail on the bank robbery charge alone is $500,000.
Well, I think certainly they have that right to be bailed out on all of these charges, provided the court is assured that they will appear at subsequent appearances. And that, in this case, is something, of course, that we would want to take into consideration with respect to the amount of the bail.
San Francisco attorney Terrence Hallinan and his father, Vincent Hallinan, will represent the Harrises and, for the time being, Patricia Hearst. She had questions about her parents on this, the day of her capture.
She asked how her parents were and where they were at, and she asked immediately to see her cousin, William Randolph Hearst III, who I think is here in the room somewhere.
Specifically when she asked for them?
She just wanted to know where they were and how they were.
Did she express dismay at the capture?
No comments. I have no comments on. I'd rather not talk about anything she said at this point. As we told the judge, we intended at this point to exercise our right to remain silent.
The parents of Patty Hearst were on opposite sides of the country when they got the word today that their daughter had finally been found and that, more important, Patty was alive and well. In San Francisco, Catherine Hearst said, "I love her. I just believe that God has answered our prayers, and please call it a rescue, not a capture." In New York, Randolph Hearst said, as his wife had, "I love Patty. It was a relief that she wasn't hurt." With that, Mr. Hearst got on board a plane for San Francisco. As Randolph Hearst remarked of his daughter's arrest, it evidently wasn't a very complicated thing. Here again is Rick Davis with details on the FBI stakeout and the arrest today.
At 1:14 p.m., Bill and Emily Harris were picked up here at 286 Placida, a house in San Francisco's outer Mission District. A cache of arms was found in a closet when federal agents moved in. The Harrises have lived here for 20 days. They have been under surveillance for about 24 hours. An hour later, Patricia Hearst and Wendy Yoshimura were arrested in this Mission District house about 2 miles from the Harris residence. An arsenal of firearms was also found at this location. But the two women offered no resistance. San Francisco policeman Tim Casey was in on the arrest.
He just went through the door. There was another girl there, and Patty was there. We said, don't move. Patty said, all right. We placed her under arrest.
Did she say anything?
I asked her if she was glad it was over, and she just didn't say a word.
Mrs. Catherine Hurst was attending a meeting of the Board of Regents in Los Angeles when word of her daughter's capture reached her. She immediately flew to San Francisco in an effort to see her daughter, Patty. At the airport, reporters were on hand, and they questioned her as she arrived in San Francisco. She had not seen her daughter now in many months.
Mrs. Hurst, you must be greatly relieved.
Oh, yes, all our prayers are answered. We can hardly believe it.
How did you hear the news today? What did you hear?
I heard it from some newspaper reporters in Los Angeles, and I just ran and caught a plane.
Have you been able to talk to Patty yet?
No, I just ran for the plane. I'm just hoping, you know, that I'll see her soon.
Are you headed out to see her now?
I'm going to try to, yes.
Tonight you're going to try to see her?
Right away, if I can, as soon as I can.
You must be glad that she's safe.
Oh, yes, thank God.
Poor Patty, she knows what it means to look down a gun at the age of 19.
Until the night of February the 4th, 1974, when she was kidnapped and carried away screaming by members of the Symbionese Liberation Army, there was absolutely nothing in the life of Patty Hearst to indicate what she would become thereafter. For more on Patty, before and after that night, here is Paul Moyer.
Patricia Campbell Hearst is the third of five daughters, born to the Randolph Hearsts of Hillsborough, California. She grows up in a big white house. Her friends call it a mansion. She goes to church regularly and attends a private school, where she falls in love with one of her teachers. He is Stephen Weed. They plan to be married. They live in a $300 a month apartment near the University of California. It was from this apartment that Patty was kidnapped, February 4th, but the news didn't get out until the next day. Witnesses say two black men and a white woman carried Patricia half naked and screaming into the night, firing guns as they fled. Weed was badly beaten, but he says he won't testify if the kidnappers release his fiancée unharmed. 2 days later, word from the abductors reaches Hillsborough. A note identifies the kidnappers as the SLA, the Symbionese Liberation Army. On February 12th, the recorded message confirms that Patty is still alive.
I'm with a combat unit that's armed with automatic weapons.
The kidnappers demand free food, enough free food to feed all of California's poor. Randolph Hearst says that would cost millions, perhaps hundreds of millions, but he says he'll do what he can. He forms People in Need, and between himself and the Hearst Foundation pledges $2 million, and thousands come to collect. April 2nd, the SLA uses a florist to deliver another message. This time there is hope, because it says details of Patty's release will be made within 72 hours.
And we believe the communique is a genuine one. And of course, we're very pleased to learn that the SLA will release Patricia within 72 hours.
Well, of course, this is a tremendous relief to me. And I was so happy to get half of Patty's driver's license. And I hope to get the other half and Patty along with it, because I believe the SLA certainly has lived up to everything they've said so far. And I have every reason to believe they'll continue to live up to their word.
Mr. Bryant, how would you get by
the very next day, there is another communique. And the voice is that of Patricia Hearst.
Well, I've been given the choice of one, being released in a safe area, or two, joining the forces of the Symbionese Liberation Army and fighting for my freedom and the freedom of all oppressed people. I have chosen to stay and fight.
The next time anybody hears from the SLA is April 15th at San Francisco's Hibernia Bank. A $10,000 robbery that the SLA calls a revolutionary expropriation. The bank's cameras take pictures. The FBI says Patty was there. Agents call her a material witness. But the U.S. Attorney General labels her a common criminal. After the robbery, the SLA lived here, just a mile or so from FBI headquarters. When Patty Hearst recorded the next communique, she may have done it in this room.
For those people who still believe that I'm brainwashed or dead, I see no reason to further defend my position. I am a soldier in the People's Army.
May 16th, in a Los Angeles suburb, There is an attempted shoplifting at Mel's Sporting Goods. The shoplifter escapes because somebody across the street fires an automatic weapon. Bullets miss five people on the sidewalk. But during a scuffle between the suspect and the security guard, the suspect says he's with the SLA. Friday, the 17th, one of the biggest police manhunts in Los Angeles begins. They are looking for the Symbionese Liberation Army. Police are now looking everywhere. At mid-afternoon, they get a telephone tip. Six heavily armed men and women may be hiding in a predominantly black neighborhood. A house on Compton Street is their target. They order the occupants to come out. When there is no response, they fire tear gas. Than an hour later, fire. The gunshots continue.
Blow it up.
And by the time it is safe for firemen to approach the house, it is too late. The SLA stand has become a funeral pyre. The next day, the search is on. The coroner says Patricia is not one of the victims. Sunday, the 19th, a sixth body is located. Everybody wonders, is that Patricia Hearst? The coroner says the answer is no. All the victims are identified. Nancy Ling Perry, Ms. Moon Soltzik, Angela Atwood, Camilla Hall, Donald DeFries, and Willie Wolf.
Rick Davis has been with this story all day in San Francisco. He is standing by in our studios there now. And Rick, just a couple of questions to tie it up before you go. Do we have any definitive information on how the FBI knew where to go after the apprehension of the Harrises?
Tom, they have been very quiet about that aspect of the case, certainly today. Special Agent Bate was asked about that several times at the press conference and gave no real reply to it. It seems, from all the information we are able to gather at time, putting little bits together, that they had some word that Patty Hearst was in the area, a leak from someone who believed they saw her. She apparently was the first one recognized. And then the 24-hour stakeout at the Harris's house began just 24 hours ago. It certainly appears to be successful at this hour.
What would happen, and I know that this is speculation on the part of all of us, if Patty Hearst were to now come forward and say, I was coerced, I was forced to do it against my will?
Terrence Helmand was asked about that tonight, and he said that there had been no real analysis of what legal theory would be used to defend Patty Hearst. He would make no comments about that. Helmand and his father, Vincent Helmand, are attorneys long acquainted with radical causes in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they would make no comment about the particular defense of Patricia Hearst tonight. In fact, they are not the lawyers of record. They're only acting for Patricia at this hour until apparently other legal counsel is found.
By all the accounts that came from the arraignment today or the courtroom proceedings, Patty was very calm and was not hysterical, did not talk loudly. What else do we know about her demeanor, if anything?
She seemed to us so thin, so small and frail, so in contrast to the pictures of that young woman holding a submachine gun in a bank in San Francisco. So in contrast to the radical rhetoric we heard on those tapes again just a few moments ago. She was wearing thick, black-tinted glasses, never raised her voice at all. One of the reporters on hand said that she would never have recognized Patricia Hearst, her hair cut in kind of a reddish-tinted shag, wearing the dark glasses. Another reporter said, she doesn't look too tough now.
What about firearms? What about weapons here? There have been a number of accounts, some wire services saying there were no weapons involved, your earlier reports that there were weapons involved. Where does that stand now?
The FBI has made no definite statement on the record, but we do have informed sources within the San Francisco Police Department who indicate to us that weapons were found both in the Harris House in San Francisco in the Mission District and again 1 hour later at the house inhabited by Patricia Hearst. So we believe at this hour that there certainly were weapons in both houses.
Finally, has the FBI made any comment on whether or not they thought it would end this easily, this painlessly?
The head of the FBI in San Francisco said that he knew they would come back here, that he knew once they got tired of running, they'd come back.
Thank you, Rick Davis in San Francisco. A man who has been on a case for as long a period of time as Charles Bates of the FBI is apt to regard what happened today in any number of ways, with, say, undisguised triumph, or with becoming modesty, or simply philosophically. Here's Charles Bates. Judge for yourself.
Well, it effectively puts an end to everybody that I know of who has been in the SLA, including the six who died in the fire and the four that were arrested today.
Mr. Bates, why did they come back to San Francisco?
When? I don't know when, I don't know why. I'm just glad they came back, and I'm glad we happened to be where we were today.
That's where we stand on the Patty Hearst case this evening. Good night for the people at NBC News.
This has been an NBC News special report.